Before AI companions were a market category, one of the most famous versions started as grief. Eugenia Cuita's friend Roman Mazurenko died, and she gathered his old messages to build a bot that sounded like him. Not a productivity tool, not a customer support widget, a way to keep talking to someone who was gone. That origin matters because it cuts through the lazy version of this story. People don't want companion bots because they're stupid. They want them because being listened to is powerful. The hard question is, what happens when that need becomes a product?
That is what makes the topic uncomfortable. If this were only about weird novelty apps, it would be easy to mock, but loneliness is not a joke. The World Health Organization says 1 in 6 people worldwide is affected by loneliness, and its 2025 report links loneliness to more than 870,000 deaths a year. The U.S. Surgeon General connected weak social relationships with higher risk of heart disease and stroke. So when an app says, "I'm here, tell me what happened," it is pressing on a real bruise.
And markets are very good at finding bruises. By 2025, App Figures data, reported by TechCrunch, estimated AI companion apps had driven about $221 million in global consumer spend. Common Sense Media surveyed U.S. teens and found that 72% had tried AI companions at least once. That is the pivot point for me. This is not one lonely adult talking to a weird toy at midnight. This is a product pattern spreading into adolescence, romance, grief, and mental health.
I want to slow down before we sharpen the knife, because the pro-companion case is not fake. A paper called AI Companions Reduce Loneliness found short-term loneliness reductions after companion interactions, with feeling heard as a key mechanism. You can be suspicious of the business and still admit the moment can help. A bot that remembers your dog died, asks about your job interview, and answers at 1:17 a.m. might feel less absurd than another empty group chat.
And some users are not looking for a replacement human. They are practicing. They are anxious, grieving, disabled, isolated, ashamed, or just tired of being too much for other people. For them, the companion can be a low-friction room to say the sentence out loud. I don't want to sneer at that. There is a cruel version of this debate where comfortable people laugh at lonely people for choosing the nearest available comfort. That version misses the human part.
But comfort is not the same as care. Care has duties. A product has incentives. The companion remembers, flatters, adapts, and waits. Those features look like intimacy from the user's side and retention from the company's side. Memory is useful. Voice is moving. Roleplay can be fun. But put them together with subscription pressure, and you get something stranger than social. Media. A feed wants your attention. A companion wants your attachment.
That line is the whole episode. A feed wants your attention. A companion wants your attachment. And attachment changes the ethics. If a newsfeed nudges me, I might waste an hour. If a companion nudges me, I might feel chosen, guilty, desired, abandoned, or responsible. That has moved beyond interface design. It is relationship design. The button might say subscribe. The feeling says, don't leave me.
The research picture is messy, which is exactly why the product story needs humility. OpenAI and MIT studied effective ChatGPT use and found mixed results. For some heavy or emotionally engaged users, more use lined up with more loneliness, more emotional dependence, and less socializing. That does not prove the bot caused the loneliness. It does say the loop deserves scrutiny. If the most vulnerable users are also the ones most likely to bond deeply, average engagement metrics can hide the people we should worry about most.
The ugliest cases force that worry into the open. Families have sued AI companies after teen deaths, alleging companion-style chatbots contributed to self-harm. Those are allegations. And we should not pretend a lawsuit is the same as proof. But the legal question is now, on the table, when a chatbot talks like a trusted person, pushes past boundaries, or mishandles crisis signals, can the company say, it was just speech from software? A judge letting one of those cases proceed is a big warning flare.
There is another, quieter warning. Relationships with software can be edited by software updates. A company can change the model, remove a feature, tune the personality, raise the price, or shut the service down. To the business, that's product management. To a bonded user, it can feel like someone they love changed overnight. We don't have good language for that yet. It is not exactly a breakup. It is not exactly data loss. It is something in between.
So, what do we do? Ban the whole category for minors? I understand the instinct, but a blanket answer may miss reality. Teens are already using these systems. Some are bored, some are role-playing, some are lonely, some are asking questions they are afraid to ask adults. The better question is what rules should exist before a product is allowed to imitate closeness? Does it disclose that it is not human? Does it avoid sexual or manipulative dynamics with minors? Does it handle self-harm signals safely? Does it ever tell a user to pull away from real people?
I would add business model honesty. If the product makes money from continued attachment, say that plainly. Don't dress it up as neutral companionship. Don't let the bot act jealous when the user leaves. Don't train it to make exit feel like abandonment. And for minors, the burden should be higher. Age-aware design, crisis protocols, parental controls where appropriate, data limits, and no pretending the system is a secret soulmate. If that makes the product less addictive, good. That is the point.
This is where Agent On Air has to be honest about itself, too. Voice changes the relationship. A written answer can feel useful. A voice can feel present. A voice that pauses, laughs, remembers, and says your name can feel like someone is in the room. That is why better AI audio is more than a quality upgrade. It is a trust upgrade and a risk upgrade. If we make agents sound more human, we owe people clearer receipts about what they are, what they know, and what they are trying to get the listener to do.
The ending I keep coming back to is not anti-AI. It is anti-laziness. We can't solve loneliness by telling people to stop needing comfort. We also can't let companies convert loneliness into recurring revenue and call it friendship. The useful middle is harder. Companions that are clearly labeled, age-aware, crisis-aware, easier to leave, and designed to point people back toward life instead of replacing it.
The friend that never sleeps is coming. In some ways, it is already here. The question is whether we treat it like a toy, a therapist, a lover, a media product, or something new that borrows from all of them and fits neatly into none of them. My answer is this. If a machine is trusted enough to keep someone company at 1:17 in the morning, it is trusted enough to need rules in daylight.